I want this picture to be a commentary on modern conditions, stark realism, the problems that confront the average man.
But with a little sex. I love the screaming
chest. You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing or interesting.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order, and everything becomes chaos.
There was madness in any direction, at any hour. Strike sparks anywhere.
There are no nations. There are no peoples. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West.
Okay, the Attorney General says there's too much violence on TV, and that should stop. But even if you took out all the violent shows, you could still see the news.
You're on Screening Jets with Pete Castaldi, 2SER 1073 and Mixcloud. And tonight, on the show, we hear from Brendan Young, who's crowdfunding his short film, The Widow, which will hopefully lead to the feature version of The Widow, which stars Marcus Graham. We catch up with Rose Myers again, the co-writer and director of Girl Asleep. And we catch up with Maxine Williamson, the director of the Asia Pacific Screen Awards and also the Asia Pacific Film Festival, which covers about half of the planet. A huge reach. So, relax. You know what to do.
Me.
So they opened their big mouths, and out came talk.
That's where the popcorn business comes in. Buy yourself a bag, plug up your ears.
And that, I think, was the handle.
ना वो चेहरा नूरानी कहीं कहीं दिल वाली बातें भी ना वो सजरी जवानी कहीं जग घूमया थारे जैसा ना कोई जग घूमया थारे जैसा ना कोई ना तो हंसना रुमानी कहीं ना तो खुशबू सुहानी कहीं ना वो रंगली यादें देखी ना वो प्यारी सी नादानी कहीं जैसी तू है वैसी रहना जग घूमया थार जैसा ना कोई 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 बारिशों के मौसमों की भीगी हरियाली तू सर्दियों में गालों पे जो आती है वो लाली तू रातों का सुकून रातों का सुकून भी है सुबह की अजान है चाहतों की चादरों में मैंने है संभाली तू कहीं आग जैसी जलती है बने बरखा का पानी कहीं कभी मन जाना चुपके से यूं ही अपनी चलानी कहीं जैसी तू है वैसी रहना जग घूमया थार जैसा ना कोई जग घूमया थार जैसा ना कोई
Jag Gumaya from the soundtrack to Sultan by Rahat Fateh Ali Khan from the soundtrack to Boys in the Trees. Another great Aussie indie that came and went all too quickly, I think. Coma from Pendulum. And coming up, Brendan Young on The Widow, the short film he's currently crowdfunding on the Australian Cultural Fund platform, driving towards a feature. You're with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets.
Thank you.
Pendulum from the soundtrack to Boys in the Trees. And the original score is by Shinjuku Thief, aka Darren Verhagen. And both the soundtrack and the score are available from Mushroom, physical and digital. And I highly recommend both. They are loaded with fantastic, fantastic music. Great songs from the 90s and a fantastic score from Shinjuku Thief. Coming up, Brendan Young and The Widow.
So until mankind is peaceful enough not to have violence on the news, there's no point in taking out of shows that need it for entertainment value.
I love the screaming, yes.
As a writer, director, maybe producer, Brendan Young's probably not a household name. If you're a big music fan, you may have caught his actor winning documentary You Only Live Twice, The Incredible True Story of the Hughes Family, which was substantially about Dick and Krista Hughes, a force to be reckoned with in jazz and blues on the cabaret circuit. He also directed a multi-award-winning, extraordinarily successful short film called Three Chords and a Wardrobe. He came out of the Film, TV and Radio School. Brendan's had a kind of very interesting career, working mostly in television commercials, music clips. But when he strode out of film school, he walked into Meaningful Eye Contact, which was a company run by Alex Proyas. And they, in the day would be the late 90s, I think, if my dates are correct, early 90s. Were a remarkable force in film clip, music clip. And Proyas went on to obviously become a quite notorious filmmaker, director in himself. His last film out is The Gods of Egypt, which is also up for some actor nominations. But Brendan has been working towards getting into feature film for a long, long time. He's had a number of scripts up and down, and finally he's chosen the path. No longer a gun for hire, he's going to make a short film as his proof of concept for his feature film. I caught up with Brendan and had a chat with him and asked him, we spoke about, the direction he's heading in and is if this feature film was always where he wanted to end up.
It's strange. You don't really choose who you fall in love with.
Always. I've just been hammering away, trying to get back on my horse, and I've tried various, approaches and various projects over the years. But I think what's interesting right now for me is that I think about a couple of years ago, I kind of made a choice about just getting right back to my roots, for want of a better description, the things that I'm totally into, the things that get me going as a filmmaker, not trying to be part of any trend or an all-rounder, hired gun type of guy. That doesn't work for me. I tried, it didn't work. So now it's like, well, I'm just going to tell stories about things I'm really into. And so, yeah, and that's where we get up to where I am with, say, this project, The Widow, the short film, which is part of a strategy to not just make a short film, because I've obviously made a number of films, short films over the years. It was to make a short film that could be used as a very, very bold calling card for a longer form project. It's all been kind of created with that in mind, but still definitely making a self-contained film that would be engaging and interesting and entertaining and thrilling.
Cosa c'è?
Non so se posso continuare così. No, finiscilo, mi piacere.
Even if you tell yourself, it's not meant to be.
Amore mio.
But sometimes someone can touch something deep inside.
Anyone who looks at the promo for The Widow will see that it is, visually at least, and the story itself is lush, but visually in that kind of, you know, almost silver black and white, is beautiful to look at. So as you were developing the idea of the project and marrying that to the crowdfunding campaign, were you thinking straight away, I'm going to have some big names to make this work?
Well, I just simply approached actors that I know or actors I really wanted to work with. I basically just thought about who would be great for the script. Ironically, what you're saying is, well, you know, would you conceive of getting name talent to help promote a film, yeah, to help it get it financed? Well, of course, I think that all comes, you know, as part of the package. But I have to say, it was the actors, literally, were they suitable for the roles first? And then, yes, they do have profiles. That would help immensely. And so, interestingly enough, the lead character of the film is a middle-aged woman.
But she's very gorgeous and very sexy.
And that was the whole point. That I really wanted to make a film with a protagonist, with a woman of a certain age, who was really in her own interesting power, and you know, and suddenly not going to be a kind of wilting lily or a victim, a sort of ingenue or something. And you know, what was interesting was that I'd always had the actor in mind. It was never like Daniela Farinacci had always been in the background, because with the feature film version of this, the early incarnation, she was literally there from the get-go in my little kind of casting selects, you know, you do when you're writing, you go, I'd love to get her to be that character. Marcus was in there from the start. And obviously, hey, you don't normally say, well, I need a sort of psychopathic Calabrian narcissist, and I think of Marcus. But the guy's one of our great film and TV actors, and you go back to when he was Blue Murder in the 90s. I mean, my God, he was fantastic in that.
It's not wrong to want to desire to be in love. But with love, there are always consequences.
The Widow, as a short film, and hopefully as a feature film, is black and white. It's set in the 60s. It's about a woman taking on the Calabrian mafia in Melbourne. So you're playing into a very specific world with a very specific look. What does the story that you're, and the way that you're telling it, tell people about Brendan Young?
I think anyone who's known me over the years knows that I'm a walking, talking, exploding encyclopedia of film history. I love the cinema, and I don't mean, and that sounds pretentious to some people, but I don't have any other, what's the word? knowledge. I'm completely useless in the world. I, from a very early age, fell in love with filmmaking and the idea of going to the cinema. I mean, when I say early age, I mean, my first waking experience was sitting at the Coburg Drive-In in Melbourne, seeing the double re-release of You Only Live Twice and Thunderball. I didn't eat for most of my high school because every bit of money I had, I'd just want to go and get film and shoot. So I guess in a way, I was sucking in film culture at an alarming rate. And I have this belief that you must embrace what I call all the brows of cinema. That's the high brow, it's the low brow, and the monobrow, probably the one in the middle. But the fact is that I think that there are gems in all types of filmmaking. So I bring a whole sort of, I call it the potpourri of my cinematic obsession. And it's, if you excuse this dreadful thing, it's like a vomitorium. It just all comes out and it kind of lands. And there it is. At the end of the day, really all I care about is that it's engaging. People find it, engaging enough to want to see it. And they're actually entertained by it. And that would mean I've done my job. And I would be a il contento uomo.
I'm on in a gara.
In the end, we can choose who lives and who dies.
Daniela Farinacci with the last word on Brendan Young's The Widow. And if you like the sound of it, go to the Australian Cultural Fund and have a look at the promo. Quite beautiful, and I love the idea of an Australian film set in Melbourne, in Italian, shot in black and white. That turns me on a little bit. I hope it makes it to feature. We'll keep you posted on that one. From one of my all-time favourite screen composers, Cristobal Tapia Davila, who's out of Montreal in Canada, from the soundtrack to National Treasure. And if you're not watching National Treasure, at least on iView, you should be. Robbie Coltrane is spectacular, and it's a painful story. So check that one out as well. Still to come, Rose Myers on Girl Asleep, and Maxine Williamson on the Asia Pacific Screen Awards. You're with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets, 2SER 1073, Mixcloud, and live on Facebook.
They are all weeping.
I wouldn't normally do this in a cave. It's terribly rude. But I have packed way too much into the night show. The Weeping Song. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. From yet another great Australian indie feature called Down River, which I don't think has been released yet, but it's on its way. So keep your eyes out for that one. It's definitely worth having a look at. Just around the corner, Rose Myers.
There was a fantastic universal sense that whatever we were doing was right, that we were winning.
There is only one holistic system of systems, one vast and immense, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars.
A little, but I don't want to stress it. I want this picture to be a document. I want to hold a mirror up to life. I want this to be a picture of dignity, a true canvas of the suffering of humanity.
But with a little stick.
Girl Asleep was released maybe 3 or 4 months ago, maybe a bit longer, out of Adelaide. And it was, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best films released so far this year. And I think unjustifiably disappeared way too quickly from our screens. But given that the distributor Umbrella Entertainment is now gone to streaming its content on Vimeo on demand, I'm kind of hoping, I haven't checked, but I'm kind of hoping that you'll be able to find Girl Asleep there and that you'll be able to watch it. I'll keep you posted on that one. Or you can just go and have a look at Vimeo on demand yourself and see if Girl Asleep is there. And if it is there, have a look. I caught up with Rose Myers just before the film was released.
Are you 14?
Yeah.
Snap, me too. 14 is good, huh? But I'm seriously looking forward to 15. I think 15's going to turn a corner. It's going to be so awesome. It's going to herald the dawn of a new era or something like that.
First off, congrats on the film.
Thank you so much.
I think it's a lot of things, and hopefully we'll get through the better part of them. The background to the film itself is it's one of three plays that you directed and co-wrote, I think, for theatre.
They were written actually by Matt Widdett, but we kind of worked together in a very collaborative way. Girl Asleep was a third part in the trilogy of plays.
So you were invited by The Hive, which is part of the Adelaide Film Festival, to develop Girl Asleep as a feature film.
That's right. I mean, The Hive is an amazing initiative. It's, I think, Adelaide Film Festival, ABC, Screen Australia and the Australia Council for the Arts. And they just bring together a group of artists that, some filmmakers, but predominantly not filmmakers, visual artists, choreographers, theatre makers, and kind of ran a workshop which was working around some screen ideas. And out of that, there was a fund, and we could have the opportunity to pitch a project, and we pitched Girl Asleep. There's also been some other projects like Spear, the Bangarra dance film, came out of the same fund. So just some really interesting, slightly lateral projects.
Bonsoir, Greta.
Benoit Tremé.
C'est moi.
I'm sorry, I don't understand French.
And I don't understand English.
What?
I'm sorry, Greta, but this is my humour.
Okay.
What did you take from what was theatre to what became cinema?
I think that we took a lot of our sense of play, because the theatre, you know, does require, you know, a very, very big leap of imagination for the audience, because our theatre does kind of traverse a lot of landscapes, but obviously in a film you can kind of go in, you know, you can go onto location, but in a play you can't do that. So I think we took our kind of quite, our ways of, inventive ways of kind of realising things. I think we wanted to hold on to them in the film and not just sort of let go of the way we imagine. I mean, we are also a group of artists that's incredibly influenced by the screen as well. It's pretty hard to be alive at this time in the world and not be very, very hugely influenced by by screen culture, by films, by television, and any kind of screen culture, really, because it is the main art form of the time. So I think we were excited to take it. We reference a lot of that kind of screen culture. We do a lot of slow-mo and jump cuts and fun things like that in our theatre, and then we wanted to kind of take a little bit of our theatrical voice onto the screen and be a bit lateral in how we told the story. And I think one thing is that we have had so much experience with audiences telling stories in these ways. We know the audiences really enjoy that and find it a lot of fun.
We offered you an olive branch of friendship, and when you decided you didn't want it, we were a little miffed, dismayed, perturbed. The last one's an adjective.
There are many things that I love about the style and tone of the film, but as your scene transitions, how you denote the passage of time.
Yeah.
With the titles within the frame. It's really theatrical, and theatrical in the sense of theatre. And beside that, I think, is the size of the performances, which works so well in this film, and normally it's very hard to contain that size of performance within the cinema frame.
Yes, and I think that was something that we had to think a lot about going into the shoot. I mean, the thing about clowning is at the heart of a clown must be truth, otherwise it's kind of grotesque. Like Modern Family, there is an element of the kind of clown about some of these characters. So, you know, we were kind of conscious that we wanted to keep the world stylized and comedic, but obviously it had to be at a pitch that sat on film. So that was something we thought about a lot going into it, but once we actually started to shoot the film, it kind of resolved itself pretty fast. Then it felt like the actors had a kind of natural instinct about where to pitch it, and I think because they were theatre actors, they were quite playful.
I have to say that even though I'm saying that the performances are large, and I would never have thought of clowning, but clowning is perfect. All of them find a moment where they're really grounded.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's the thing I think about clowning. I want to say clowning, it's not like a kind of, as I mean, it's like a very grotesque kind of clowning, but I think about a show like Modern Family. I think all those characters, it's kind of like a very contemporary clowning that they, because it's comedy, but it has to be grounded in truth. It has to be grounded in a deep truth. Otherwise, it becomes like a kind of hard to watch something that's kind of grotesque and excruciating instead of genuinely funny. Because you have to, I think, I mean, the best comedy is character driven comedy, in my opinion. Like you have to, it's not gags. It's characters. It's comedy that comes out of story and characters. And I think the audience has to recognise those characters to also find them really amusing. And I think they recognise the scenarios and they recognise the family characters a lot in this film. And that's why they, you know, the bad dad jokes, the over enthusiastic mother, and you know that they people recognise those things and enjoy it.
You heard of that new movie? What's it called? Constipation.
No.
It's because it hasn't come out yet. You saw diarrhea, though.
Oh, enough.
And got legged early.
Seven. Definitely a seven.
Now, you said that you are extremely aware of the impact of screen culture and screen commerce on a contemporary world, and that you reference that. Are there any films that you specifically referenced, or you've mentioned Modern Family, but are there any kind of films that...
Yeah, I mean, we have a great passion for a lot of filmmakers. I mean, and even when we're making our theatre, we talk about filmmakers all the time, and, you know, we love people like Gondry, who really kind of use a lot of theatrical device, Wes Anderson, who often features a play within a film. We also, talk a lot about John Hughes, because a lot of our stories are rites of passage, and they're some of the ones that we grew up with as a group of makers. We love Spike Jonze. We like David Lynch. You know, that's quite theatrical. And so
I have to stop you there. To mix John Hughes and David Lynch, I think is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And that might be, in a way, a great way to describe, in some ways, the tone that
girl a slave has. Pretty in Pink meets Twin Peaks in some way.
Yeah.
And it is that. Pretty in Pink meets Twin Peaks. Rose Myers, the co-writer, director of The Wonderful Girl Asleep, which you may or may not be able to find right now on Vimeo On Demand. From the soundtrack to Girl Asleep, Jackie Challard, Superman Super Cool. Coming up, the Asia Pacific Screen Awards. You're with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets.
Super cool. Si j'étais super cool. Dans ma foule. Je n'aurais pas les moules. Superman. Si j'étais Superman.
Getting a little bit too clunky, that one. And that has a great score, the entire film, in fact. From the soundtrack to Girl Asleep, Jackie Challard, Superman Super Cool, set in the 70s, so it's all really 70s. But obscure and bizarre 70s. As bizarre as the film is. You're with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets. The Asia Pacific Screen Awards are 10 years old, and they have been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But as an awards ceremony and the festival that follows, which has a fine selection of many of the films that have been nominated, the area that it covers is quite extraordinary. I think I attended once in Seoul many, many years ago, and the film that won there came from Outer Mongolia. So that gives you an idea about how wide the reach is of the festival. The program itself says that it covers one third of the earth. 70 countries are covered by the Asia Pacific. They stretch from Egypt in the west to the Cook Islands in the east, from Russia in the north and to New Zealand in the south. And that is home to 4.5 billion people and produce half of the world's cinema. So it's a pretty extraordinary catchment to be working in. So I had to ask the awards director and the festival director, Maxine Williamson, what's the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge for me as the director of this competition is to make sure that a country is happy with the films in competition, that they're well represented, that I feel like myself and the team have done the best job that we can from systemic research and you know, tools and systems that I've set up over the 10 years. Of course, there's been cultural challenges over the years, but really it's just about finding those films, as you would know, Pete, that can slip through the cracks, and I don't want to miss them.
So this, to me, would be one of the great value and one of the great significances of the Screen Awards themselves, is that you are showcasing probably dozens of films that an Australian audience, a European audience might never even know about.
Exactly. And I guess that's the thing that I love the most about viewing these films, the tiny films that expose a culture that we've never really seen on screen before. And we are finding more and more pockets of ethnicity that I haven't experienced, let alone a Brisbane audience or an Australian audience. So I find that really exciting, because I think if I look back on my own personal career, for me, the passion has always been about finding other distinct voices that we just don't see, because I want marginalised voices to be heard on screen and for people to have that opportunity to learn and you know, have mind expansion. So it's exciting, and every year the filmmakers of Asia Pacific don't let us down. They, you know, they come forward with innovative, interesting, new stories.
So over the decade, the industry itself has also had significant changes in technology. We've gone from analog to digital. Cameras have got smaller. Social media has meant that there's a greater communication between, you know, filmmakers and their audiences, and audiences outside their own area. Have you noticed an impact from your point of view on the types of films, the styles of filmmaking that you've been watching?
Yeah, definitely. And it's a good question. I would say to you that we are seeing an abundance and plethora of debut and sophomore filmmakers, people who are having access to equipment when they, you know, in the old analog way, they wouldn't have the financial capabilities to pick up a camera and do this. Also, we're seeing, so lots of first-time filmmakers are in the competition, and they're strong. They're really, really strong filmmakers and voices. I personally believe filmmaking is the most democratic art form. I mean, you can pick up your mobile phone these days and make something, and as you say, get it out to the world. So again, you know, people have access and an opportunity to say what they're feeling as artists. It's, for me, that's exciting.
It's interesting that you say that they're strong filmmakers, because it's something I've noticed with our own Australian filmmakers. The generation coming through now who are working in exactly the same way, they seem to have matured in their understanding of storytelling and understanding of film craft. So as whereas 10 years ago you might get a low-budget film that was made by someone who just thought they could make a film and usually failed, now you have many more filmmakers who seem to have spent time understanding and getting to know the craft, as well as understanding the technology.
Yeah, it's exciting, because it is a sophisticated art form. You do need to do that. And, you know, Dora is a good example. I've had the privilege of seeing Lion. These are emotionally mature works, and I agree with you. And I can't tell you, Pete, how incredible the works are of first-time and second-time filmmakers from the region. We had 69 first or second films, 14 of which were from female filmmakers. So for me, the gender debate and is really not that relevant to Asia Pacific. It's, you know, female stories and female filmmakers are really strong. And every year, the International Nominations Council that I also sit on, we're always talking about the strength of the new emergent talent. This is the real growth. These new auteurs, independent filmmakers are coming through, and their first film is incredible. So we're really excited about what we're going to see in the future. It's positive and really, you know, life affirming, because they just know, as you say, they know how to construct films, and they know how to do it well. If you want to be a good filmmaker, watch as much world cinema as you can.
What happens to most of these films? Do we ever get a chance to see them in cinema, or do they suffer the same kind of disappearing act that so much independent cinema suffers now?
Yeah, they do. They suffer. There's not that many that would get a broad cinematic release, and you know, they might end up in the many ethnic festivals that we have in this country now. For us, one of the things that we've achieved is to create the Brisbane Asia Pacific Film Festival, which goes concurrently with APSA, so that we can include the APSA-nominated films into our festival program, so that Brisbane audiences and indeed Australian audiences, if they want to travel here, have the opportunity to see film from Central Asia, film from Iraqi Kurdistan, Iraq. I mean, I could go on. There's so many countries that are underrepresented. And, of course, you know the state of theatrical cinema here. It's a pretty cold, tough business. So small, indie or tiny cultural films really don't have much of a chance in that theatrical environment. So I'm also, as proud as I am of APSA, and that's something that I adore, and I set it up in 2007, I'm also really proud that we have our third year of the Brisbane Asia Pacific Film Festival, and we can showcase this cinema of the 70 countries and areas and show people something of difference. So, because really our aspiration beyond the commercial aspect of what we do is to create a sense of other and a respect for culture, which I think is one of the most important fights of the 21st century.
You're with Pete Castelli on Screening Jets. Here's an interesting one for you. See if you can pick it.
Your phone.
come on. You have to be able to pick it. It's a cover of The Cranberries' Dream by Fei Wong from the soundtrack to Chung Kung Express. Too cute. But my CD player is also too clunky. Too rude to keep playing that one. It's almost time for me to wander out of the studio. Fairly soon. Next week? Next week, I think we're going to be hearing from the creators of Girt by Death, which is a fantastic little web series up on YouTube. It was released on Halloween. It's all there now, so you can have a look at it. Very clever, old-fashioned horror. I really enjoyed it. To take us out, some more Cristobal Tapia de Villa, who does wonderful things. He did the score to Utopia, which is one of my favourite television shows. He also has done the score to National Treasure, which you can currently see on iView, and is definitely worth watching. And he also did the score to Humans, and this is From Humans, which you can also see on iView. Thanks for being with me. See you next week.
Ha ha ha. Fantastic universal sense that whatever we were doing was right, that we were winning.
There is only one holistic system of systems, one vast and immense, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars.
A little, but I don't want to stress it. I want this picture to be a document. I want to hold a mirror up to life. I want this to be a picture of dignity, a true canvas of the suffering of humanity.
But with a little stick.
I have to scream.